Major General MacConville, good afternoon. My name is Peggy Botplay. I'm a press officer at NATO headquarters, and I've been working closely with your team, who I'm thanking right now for their cooperation in pulling this together. I will be moderating this event today. It's a great pleasure to have you with us, and I would like to thank you for making time to address some of the journalists from the Brussels Press Corps here today. I have three journalists with me. On my left, Ethan Bilby from Reuters, and then on my right, Stephen Fiedler from the Wall Street Journal and Nicolas Busse from Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. Without any further ado, I give you the floor for the introductory remarks.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon, and good afternoon to Brussels. In fact, being from the 101st Airborne Division, our division has a very proud history in that area, specifically at Bastogne. So it's good to see you all, and thanks for taking some time to showing an interest in what's going on here in Regional Command East and here in Afghanistan. And as I said, I'm Jim McConville. I'm the division commander for the 101st Airborne Division, CJTF 101, and Regional Command East. And Regional Command East, is, as some of you may know, includes 14 provinces surrounding Kabul, the nation's capital. It stretches along Afghanistan's eastern border with Pakistan. And just for background, from 2008 to 2009, I served as a deputy commanding general for the 101st Airborne Division here in Regional Command East and CJTF 101. And it's really my honor to return, and so a lot of the answers I will be giving are from that perspective. And the 101st Airborne Division, we assume responsibility for command of Regional Command East on March 14th. And our primary focus here is to advise and assist the Afghan security forces so they can secure their country. And today, advised and assisted by the coalition forces, the Afghan security forces really lead the mass majorities of operations in Regional Command East. We've advanced from being shoulder-to-shoulder, or in Dari, Shana-Bashana, to over the shoulder in Dari Bashana, advising the Afghan security forces while they plan, coordinate, and lead the missions. When I was first here less than 5 years ago, we did most of the fighting. We partnered for some operations, but at that time, the Afghan security forces were a nascent organization, unable to field adequate forces to meaningfully contribute to the mission. In the years since, though, things have changed to the better. They have grown in number and capability. Now, in RC East, there's two Afghan National Army Corps operating in our region, one in the area north of Kabul and one in the area of south Kabul. We no longer have U.S. Infantry Brigade combat teams conducting combat operations in our area. We are organized as a security force assistance brigades, and under these six brigades, we have 76 security force assistance teams. Each team is fully dedicated to proactively mentoring a particular Afghan unit in day-to-day operations. The employment of these teams does not mean the end of all combat operations by coalition forces. We continue to fight alongside our Afghan partners as necessary. So you probably said, well, how is it going, and where do I think we are right now? Well, the Afghan security forces and Regional Command East continue to grow into an effective fighting force, demonstrating daily the will and capability to aggressively take the fight to the enemy and operate successfully with minimal assistance from the coalition forces. The Afghan security forces are more capable of securing their people, their elections in 2014, and their future. They're better equipped, they're better prepared to secure Afghanistan, to protect its territories and people, enforce the rule of law. With ongoing support from NATO, ISAF, and the broader international community, Afghanistan has successfully recruited, trained, and organized a large, capable, and integrated force that the Afghan people have grown to embrace as the pride of their nation. Just as security forces in our countries do, the Afghan security forces comprise a layered security framework, which includes the Afghan National Army, the Afghan National Police, and the Afghan Local Police. At the most basic level, in the rural areas and villages, there is the Afghan local police. It's a lot like we consider our local policemen. Afghan local police now number over 8,000 in Regional Command East. They're instrumental in defending local villages from insurgents' attacks, provide immediate and direct support to the local people by denying the enemies of Afghanistan the ability to live and move freely among them. The next layer of security is the Afghan Uniformed Police, with nearly 27,000 officers that secure the small towns and roads and are responsible for day-to-day law enforcement, investigations, and policing. And then there's the Afghan National Civil Order Police, with approximately 4,500 members operating within regional command east. They're highly trained, they're a quick reaction and specially equipped police force aimed at dealing with advanced police situations such as civil disorder, looting, hostage taking, and riots. And in our areas, the civil order police are primarily responsible for protecting the highways. Then we have the Afghan border police that secure the border crossings. They number over 8,000 strong in the region, and they conduct law enforcement and security operations along Afghanistan's international border and points of entry within Pakistan. And finally, there is the Afghan National Army, the most respected institution in the country. When I was here in 2008, the Afghan Army was just 5 years old and still coming together as an organization. The Afghan Army participated with coalition forces, usually using individual soldiers or small teams to learn the basics of combat patrolling. Today, we have two Army Corps in Regional Command East, comprising over 36,000 soldiers, and they are in the lead for security in their areas. They conduct deliberate, intelligence-driven operations, with coalition forces providing only minimal support in extreme circumstances. While previous initiatives focused primarily on the growing size of the Afghan security forces, our focus now is improving the quality and capability of the force, developing the right balance of seniority, skills, and specialization that are vital to their long-term sustainability and success. To put it plainly, the Afghans know how to fight. We don't have to teach them that. What we are doing now is helping them become a much more professional force. Afghan security forces now lead most of the operations against the enemies of Afghanistan and regional command east, and they carry out the majority of their own training. During recent high-profile attacks on the governor's compound in Panjshir, the International Committee of the Red Cross Office in Jalalabad, and the attack in Paktia, which killed 17 Afghan civilians, 10 of which were children walking home from school, the Afghan security forces responded quickly and aggressively with little or no coalition assistance. Yet the enemies of Afghanistan continue to wage war on the people at the expense of innocent women and children. The fact that they arrived a bomb-laden motorcycle and a group of children killing 10, and then they attacked the International Committee of the Red Cross, shows they have little consideration for innocent Afghans or an internationally respected organization dedicated to the protection of civilians. The Afghanistan's enemies know they cannot defeat the Afghan security forces in a head-to-head fight. They're keenly aware that they're increasingly losing the support of the local population. They seem to be displaying a level of indiscriminate attacks on civilians that I have not seen before. The transition to Afghan-led security, governance, and development remains on track. The people are ready for this transition. In the near future, Afghanistan will enter Tranche 5, the fifth and final phase of transition, which will result in Afghan security forces exerting full security responsibility across Afghanistan by the end of 2014. With this change, the campaign progresses from one focused on coalition-led combat operations to one which further enables the development of the Afghan security forces in key areas such as logistics, intelligence, medical evacuation, aviation, and building critical institutional systems for their long-term benefit and self-sustainment. As our campaign has progressed and evolved, so too must our force posture and presence. The forces required to advise and assist the Afghans are not the same as those required in past years. That said, redeployment is a natural outcome of this successful transition. We're in the process of redeploying coalition vehicles, equipment, and logistical supplies, and closing or transferring military bases to the Afghan units and officials. During our peak in 2011, Regional Command East once had 114 outposts and bases. When we assumed responsibility in March, we had 58. Today, we have only 30 bases and 14 assistance platforms still in operation. For more than a decade, Afghanistan has benefited greatly through unprecedented international support and has gained a strong foundation on which to build a secure future. But it's ultimately for the Afghans themselves to make that a sustainable success. From where I stand as commander of CGTF 101 and Regional Command East, I believe that this is not only possible, but it's happening. Thank you for listening, and I am prepared to take your questions.
Thank you very much, General. Who would like to raise a first question? Stephen?
I have some more. It's Stephen Fidler from the Wall Street Journal. I have some more specific questions later, but a general question, really. This transition goes ahead, what are your biggest headaches? What are the things that most concern you? Where is the transition, in your view, going slowest, and what one needs to be most urgently addressed in it?
Yeah, thanks for that question. You know, one of the things that that we see as what winning looks like in Regional Command East is that the Afghan security forces can secure the people and secure the region. So naturally, we're going to have them in the lead, and they are taking the lead. And as we go through it, we are convinced, or at least I'm convinced, that the Afghan security forces cannot be defeated. And really what their center of gravity comes down to is maintaining confidence. And so as we go forward and they pick up a much larger role in security operations, it's just them feeling comfortable that they can actually do it. And we see them executing that every single day.
This is Nicolas Busse for Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung from Germany. I would like to talk to you about an incident that actually did not happen in your RC, but in RC North, and wanted to ask you if you had seen similar things. There was an incident recently, a couple of weeks ago, that did not go down well in Germany and received a lot of attention, where a joint operation of special forces of the German armed forces and the Afghan armed forces ended in combat with the Taliban, and in two incidents, the Afghan forces just ran away and a German soldier was killed. So there were a lot of questions asked if the overall narrative that we are getting from NATO and that you just repeated is correct, that the Afghan forces are really capable of fighting, of conducting own operations. I was just wondering, did you have similar experiences? How do you see incidents like that?
Well, I can't really comment on what happened in Regional Command North, but I can comment on what's going on in Regional Command East. At least, again, I've been here a little over 90 days, and I have not seen an incident with our special forces and Afghan security forces when they got into a fight with the Taliban where they ran. In fact, we just had one of our brigades from the 201st Corps conduct an attack into the Wago Valley, which has historically been a Taliban stronghold. And they did that by themselves. They did that without any coalition forces on the ground. And they are presently holding that area right now. So there's, you know, as we talk about the Afghan security forces, as they go through, I mean, there's combat going on right now as we speak. The area is being contested. But what I have seen during multiple operations is when the Afghan security forces are committed to doing a mission, they can get it done.
Hi, Ethan Bilby from Reuters. I had a question for you about Phase 5. You mentioned Phase 5. Can you be any more specific in terms of the timings of when you see, you know, the changes taking place in Phase 5 and the Afghan forces completing that takeover?
You know, as far as Phase 5, that's, you know, that I really can't be too much clearer in that. I know right now at the senior policy level that they're discussing that, and once they complete that coordination, they will make that announcement. And really, what we will do is respond to that announcement, and then partner with the Afghan security forces, execute the directives within that policy.
General, we're seeing a number of attacks in the capital, and the suggestion that these attacks are being mounted from the provinces around Kabul, which is, I think, your RCE's territory. Once you know, heard of kind of restrictions on what coalition troops can do in Wardak and elsewhere, restrictions on night raids, on air support, the demands to draw special forces from Wardak, freeing of prisoners in Bagram, all of these are being suggested as reasons why these attacks may be on the increase. I mean, do you agree with that assessment? Is that really limiting you in these areas? And you know, what needs to be done about it?
Well, I think the Afghan security forces are very committed to protecting the capital. They certainly understand the importance of that. The enemy of the Afghan people of course, the reason they go to the capital is because that's where they can get the highest profile attack. And we just saw one the other day, in fact, yesterday, where they took a car bomb into the Capitol and killed a bunch of innocent civilians. And I can tell you from here that all of Afghanistan security forces and the coalition forces that are advised and assisted are doing all they can to prevent those type of incidences, which quite frankly, I think go against everything that we stand for, that the enemy of Afghanistan would go into a city and intentionally attack innocent women and children.
General, you mentioned the border to Pakistan. This was always one of the weak spots in your area because fighters were coming over the border. Could you describe us a little bit how the situation is today?
Well, there has been some tension along the border. I think you've probably seen some reports about that. We are actively, at least in the support role, we understand the importance. And I think both the Afghans and the Pakistanis understand the importance of having a constructive border relationship. Both countries have challenges internally, and I think anything that takes them away from some of the internal challenges that they have right now is not helpful for the peace and security that, when I talk to them, both want along the border.
Hi, following up on that, the Pakistan border, you know, the fighting season is beginning this year. And how do you feel, what's your sense of the strength of forces you're coming up against coming over the border? I mean, do you have any kind of numbers you can estimate, or and do you think it's stronger or weaker than prior years?
What's interesting with numbers, and I'm always kind of weary of using numbers in Afghanistan because the statistics. I've seen a couple of things written on statistics wise. I think the quantity that we're seeing is very similar to what we've seen in the past, at least by the statistics that we have. And what do I mean by that? The statistics are somewhere within about 10% of significant activities that we've seen over the last 3 years. What seems to be different this year, and again, we're doing some trend analysis, is at least from in Regional Command East, the significant activities seem to have started a month earlier. But this seems to be, at least as we've studied 2011, 2012, and 2013, it seems that the significant activities have peaked 1 month before the start of Ramadan. So as Ramadan slips left, what we're seeing is in 2011, it peaked around July-ish, 2012, it peaked in June, and we're waiting to see. We haven't been here long enough to see how it peaks here. But what's different now, at least from years past, is the Afghan security forces are doing most of the fighting. And we have seen, there's certainly been an increase based in enemy casualties this year than we've seen over the last 2 years.
Thank you. General, it seems that the suggestion, from what you suggesting, the suggestion that somehow the Taliban would reduce activities and await the departure of the combat operation from NATO's combat operation is not being borne out by what's happening. There seems to be no sort of easing of Taliban attacks from what you're saying. But you mentioned, and I'd like you to comment on that, but you mentioned Ramadan coming up, and are you concerned, and do you expect, or are you concerned about the possibility of more green on blue attacks during Ramadan? Are you making special, taking special measures to deal with that?
Yeah, I do want to just hold on a second. I do want to read. As we just had a blue and green here, I just want to. I got a note from the Corps Commander. I think it's worthwhile to read. So I'm just going to pick it up here. One of the things I'd like to just kind of, I picked this note up because I think it goes to how we think. First of all, on these insider or green on blue type attacks, and first of all, we take them very, very seriously, but I think it's also important to see how the Afghans take them, because a lot of folks will talk about that, and we recently suffered one, and the Corps Commander passed a note to me. And I'm just going to read it to you. And this is what he got up and gave a speech to his troops right after he happened. And what he said was, he was talking to his soldiers at the place it happened. And first of all, he was very sad and he was very upset. He said, "Your nation has confidence in you as Afghan soldiers. Your force is responsible for bringing security to Afghanistan. Remember always that we are sworn by oath to do what is right. We must treat all people with respect, both Afghans and our coalition brothers and sisters. Yesterday's event was tragic beyond all belief. Coalition forces are here to help us, and we failed in our responsibility to treat them right. One person's actions affect how people perceive the entire force. We need to learn from this tragedy to ensure that this never happens again. This event wasn't just bad for the Afghan National Army. It was bad for all of Afghanistan. We failed our advisor, brothers and sisters, and this will not happen again. And again, we take a lot of precautions. I won't get into all the techniques, tactics, procedures that we use. But we are very, very concerned with that. We understand as we move forward that the enemy is of Afghanistan is trying to break the trust that we have with our Afghan partners. And so we anticipate him trying to do more of these type of things, just like we anticipate that the enemy will try to do more high-profile attacks in Kabul because of the effect that they get.
General, you mentioned that the Afghans are leading more and more operations. I was wondering, from what you see on the ground every day, what do you think? How much help do they still need after 2014, especially when it comes to enablers?
Well, after 2014 is you know, and really what it really comes down to is how much help they need. I think they have a sufficient level of force right now to defeat the enemies of Afghanistan. The question is how much overmatch you want to have. And really what we want to try to do is give them as much overmatch as we can so that the enemy of Afghanistan goes, there's no reason to fight, there's no way we can win, we should come to the table, we need to stop the violence, we need to stop killing innocent people, there's really no reason to do that. And, you know, that's why this summer, I think, is a decisive time in the campaign. Because before, the enemy could say, you know, when I was here in 2008, 2009, since coalition forces were doing most of the fighting, they could try to argue that they were fighting against foreign occupiers. I didn't agree with that, but they could make that argument. They can no longer make that argument. They are waging war on the Afghan people. They are killing innocent Afghan women and children, and I quite frankly don't see how they, you know, can use it, can make that argument anymore. And they use that argument to get recruits. And we're seeing that starting to change. It's still nascent right now. As we lean out our forces, the coalition forces aren't as present, as the Afghan security forces step in the lead, they can go into places that in 2008, 2009, we could never go.
General, you said that there's certainly been an increase in enemy casualties this year versus last year. Why do you think that is? I mean, how much more of an increase are we talking about?
Well, I don't want to give exact numbers because you guys will come back around and I'll find, you know, again, statistics in Afghanistan are not an exact science. But, you know, what I'm seeing on the battlefield and what my statisticians will show me is it's been a pretty significant increase. And that's what as I do battlefield circulation, that seems to be what we're seeing. Here's what I think. I think that the quantity of enemies of Afghanistan attacks may be similar or a little less than they have been in the past. I'm not so sure the quality's there anymore. You know, so as a result, they're engaging, you know, Afghan forces probably not with the capability that they had before, and also, you know, they're engaging Afghans in their home territory. And quite frankly, the Afghan security forces are holding their own. In some cases, I've watched the progression where they're actually doing very well.
General, could you give us an update on in your area of what's going on in these reconciliation process, whether you're seeing numbers of Taliban fighters coming over to the to talk to government the government side, what is the trend of that in RC East?
I think we're seeing some, but I would not. I think it's too early in the fighting season. It's too early in the transition of security forces to see a large amount. I think a lot of the Afghan, I think a lot of the insurgents are going to be watching very carefully over the next couple of months to see how this plays out. And I think what they'll do is they'll, you know, a lot of them tend to be fence sitters. We are starting to see some cracks and fissures in places. In Ghazni, we had an anti-Taliban movement. Up in Kunar, we had an anti-Taliban movement. So there's some movements coming along, but I think it's just too early to say that there's a mass movement to reintegration. And I think, you know, after this summer, and as the security forces continue to lead and continue to stand up, and as some of the fighters recognize that they're not fighting foreign occupiers, and they start looking at who's supporting them and how this thing is all working out, and we hope to see more.
General, it seems like we're running out of questions on this end. I will pass on the floor to you for any concluding remarks before we close this session.
Now, I'd just like to thank you all for taking time, you know, a few minutes out of your day to hear about Regional Command East and all that's being done here. I think we're really at an historical and critical time in this operation. And, you know, I can tell you that the Afghans are in the lead. They're securing the country. And I think at the end of the day, the real question here is if the Afghans can provide a sufficient level of security for a stable government. And I believe that answer is yes. And the Afghans that I talked to believe the answer is yes also. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General, again for your time and availability, and I wish you the best of luck for the continuation. Thank you.